All right, Chuckle. Enjoying yourself over there? Would you like to share that with the class?
I hope you brought enough for all of us.
End. Welcome to Season 5, Episode 6 of Lugger Radio. I am John O'Bacon.
I'm Stuart Langridge.
I'm Adam Sweet.
And I'm Chris Proctor.
And on the show, we're going to be talking about... God, it's just so much interesting stuff for us to talk about, such as the forums.
You've forgotten what we're talking about. What you were going to say, weren't you?
Maybe a little, but we are going to talk about... We're going to talk about people posting malicious commands into the forums and how do we control this and other things that involve rubbing of beards.
Okay, you've sent us loads of emails, and among them are things about using real Unix, and you've got people telling us about, I'm completely fucked,
You have, haven't you? Yeah.
No, I can't even speak. we're talking about real Unix rather than Linux. We're talking about things that people have been working on. Lots of people have sent in ideas for projects, and we love to hear about that. Tell us more of it. And we want to talk about OpenStreetMap.
We're going to talk about people's motivations for actually doing what we do. Why are we all using Linux? Why do you spend so much time doing it?
And me and Adam try and educate Jono and Ack about virtualization in words of only one syllable.
In the face of absolute ignorance.
And in the face of Jono coughing his guts up because he's not well.
I've been off with a flu.
Man flu.
It's real flu. I've had flu and it's been real and everything.
Man flu.
I've had real flu.
Man flu.
Real flu.
Man flu.
Real, I don't know why I'm getting more northern way of saying real flu. Like flu used to be.
Man flu.
Anyway, should we do the show?
Maybe. In the long, turgid history of Lugger Radio, we have passed viewpoints on many different things.
We have.
And we had a segment called Hype or Shite that covered many of these different things.
Yes.
Realising that hype and shite are both not very good. Yeah?
Yes.
So today, we want to cover the important subject of virtualization, I'm sorry.
Don't take the piss.
So we have... Hypervisor or shite?
1.0.
Get it from linspire.com.
Okay, I think the point of this segment really was to just discuss virtualization, not visualization, as I erroneously thought at 3 a.m. in the morning, hence the piss taking at my expense.
In essence, what this boils down to, I think, is that Chris and Adam both understand visualization.
Virtualization.
And neither John nor I know anything about it other than the fact that it's very trendy and lots of people are talking about it. So.
I can say words.
You can go, power virtualization. Hypervisor. I don't know what any of it means.
Why would you want to virtualize a parrot?
I thought it was a paratrooper.
Back to the show. Meanwhile, back at Lugger Radio Tower. So I guess the point here is what we're going to do. I think we're just going to discuss what virtualization is and cover some of the words that nobody understands.
Can I start this off? Because I'd like to know what is the big fuss about virtualization?
Well, that's the point of the subject, really.
Yeah, so tell me right now why virtualization, I think we all know what it is. It's running, it's a piece of software pretending to be a piece of hardware and you can run other software on it, right? That's fine. But why should people care?
Okay, I mean, whether you care or not, I don't actually, I'm not actually worried about, unfortunately. But basically, the two major uses are it is on the desktop for running another OS and just taking a look at it, or on the server, which is where there's a lot more value in it for me and Chris, which is where you can consolidate multiple physical servers into one or slightly more physical servers.
So you can chain virtual machines together.
Yeah, I mean, you can instead of having, 50 servers, right? You can have, say, 8 or 10 servers and run
50 virtual machines on top of them.
Yeah.
Basically.
And so, yes, but first of all, you don't have to manage more than one physical machine. And also, you reduce your power costs and your management costs and your management time and so on.
Is the point here, then, that... if you've got a server doing whatever, not a virtual server, just an ordinary physical server, is the point that a lot of the power of that server is going to waste, and therefore you could have it running
top.
Or do you get 50 servers and consolidate them into 8 really big, much more powerful servers, so it costs the same amount of money to buy them?
You tend to, but if you look at kind of most servers, you'll find that they run idle basically 90% of the time, 95% of the time. They do nothing. Mm-hmm. So they only serve the odd request every now and then.
So the point is,
so what's the point in having a whole machine that drinks, you know, 300 watts or whatever they, you know.
So what you're doing is you're basically lining up the requirements for that software with the actual, the power
if
required.
If you have like 10 servers that all do that, why bother? Why not consolidate them all onto a single box that'll then run kind of a 70% utilization?
So if you've got one piece of hardware, it is actually capable of being 10 or 15 different servers.
Generally, they're more powerful hardware, you
need more RAM, you need a reasonable processor, but as Chris says, mostly your servers are running idle most of the time, unless you're getting absolutely...
That's the next level of multitasking, isn't it?
And the other advantage is that you can segregate... Instead of, say, selling shared hosting, for example, which is where there's loads of customers in the same physical machine, not particularly well isolated, you can put each customer in its own virtual machine, which means that they're completely separated from everything else. And also, you can even isolate your services. Say you run your DNS server in a single virtual machine. Hmm. And if your DNS server gets owned, it's not going to take down the whole operating system.
But this begs one question. What the fuck is a hypervisor?
Okay.
So,
having prepared for this, because...
It sounds like something from Mask.
Right. Both me and Chris know the answer to this, but the problem is, every time we try to explain things like power virtualization and hypervisor, we always go, it's kind of this and it's kind of that. So
And then we fall asleep. Yeah.
So we're looking for more of a nutshell description.
So basically, what a hypervisor is probably what you probably more commonly call a virtual machine manager.
Right.
So, that's
basically the bit of software that lets you run all of these virtual machines, each with their own operating system on one.
Right. So it's like VMware, then. The host OS as opposed to the guest OS. Guest OSes.
Basically, I mean, in VMware, I know Jono's used VMware. I'm not sure if you've
used VMware.
Basically, that's your hypervisor. The environment itself is the hypervisor.
I thought it was a hardware thing.
Right, no, that's another thing.
It can be.
But hold on, there are two types of hypervisor. One is the one which runs in user land, like traditional VMware.
Okay.
And then there's the other type of hypervisor, such as Xen, for example, runs below the operating system. Actually, I'm lying.
Below the operating system.
Basically, it runs on the bare metal of the system and provides the features. It sits underneath the kernel.
So it's like, a hardware hypervisor is kind of like...
It's like someone took VMware, went, VMware, that seems like a good idea, but at the moment you've got an operating system running, and then you've got VMware, and then you've got stuff running on VMware. Why don't we just get rid of the operating system at the bottom and make that a kind of thin VMware
things
layer.
Like Xen and things like VMware ESX Server basically are an operating system by themselves. They run, you install them on your bare metal hardware,
that makes sense.
They do... is allow you to run other operating systems on top of that.
And then, as I understand it, there's stuff in modern CPUs now that supports this kind of thing and makes it easier for Xen and stuff to do.
That is what's called hardware-assisted virtualization, and which is the latest Intel. I mean, I'm talking about x86 here. So that is Intel and AMD, modern Intel and AMD processors.
The VT extensions.
Yeah, VT extensions, which basically means, now this is... But this is where it starts getting computer science time, right?
So, can't wait.
Basically, shut your face. The traditional x86 processor doesn't support virtualization at all very well, because you've got what's called the ring model of security, which is where your kernel runs in ring 0 and is the most privileged, and you've got ring 1, ring 2, and on the outside you've got your end user applications like your desktop environment.
So basically, things that run in ring 0, which are operating systems, and they assume they'd have full, complete control over the hardware. So they can do what they like with the hardware at any point in time, makes no difference.
And it doesn't matter, because not only are they in control, but they're the only thing.
They're the only thing. When you're into virtualization, obviously they're not the only.
So they can go, I think I'll turn that bit of hardware off, and not have to think, what if someone else
is
using
it?
Because by definition, I'm the only one who's using it, and therefore I must be okay.
As we were going to discuss, there's more than one way of doing virtualization, but the hardware extensions in the processor make this easier, because it basically takes the original 4-ring model and makes two of them. The original one Gets
what?
Sorry, you're gonna have to back up.
I didn't understand that.
Right, okay,
so I'm not really very clear on this four. I understand you've got ring naught where operators live and ring three where like
yeah, essentially, lives. So I don't understand essentially what's in think between. think of it as like operating system level stuff and user land level stuff. Because you only really use two of the rings anyway. So. Operating system stuff that thinks it's in full control of the hardware, and you get user land level stuff that does what it, you know.
Talks to the kernel.
Talks to the kernel, talks to the operating system.
Okay.
Okay, so basically, what it takes, these extensions take that four ring model and virtualizes it. You get one real ring model, which is called the root something.
Okay, Adam checks his crib sheet.
Yeah, sorry, as I said, we get some of these
wrong. You guys are doing pretty well here.
I'm quite impressed.
We know our stuff, you know. don't just sit around and manage communities.
I was looking at Adam when I said
work.
That, by the way.
Well, anyway, fuck off.
Basically, you take the original ring model and effectively make two, and the one that a virtual machine sees is actually virtualized. And so the hypervisor can then control what the guest virtual machine sees as real hardware. And when the kernel on a virtual machine goes, what protection mode am I in? The processor can genuinely say you're in ring zero, even though you're actually in a virtualized ring zero.
Right, okay.
Does that make sense?
Not really.
You look confused.
Essentially,
you end up with the processor convinces the operating system that it's running ring zero, like it thinks it wants to be. But it isn't.
Okay,
it cons it into thinking.
I understand that, but that's what VMware does before all this power virtual VT bollocks.
No,
I mean, you know, when Windows runs in a virtual machine, it believes it's got access to the real hardware, doesn't it?
It believes, but that's what's called full virtualization, right?
Okay.
Now, here we go. This is the other type.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
The traditional type, which is what most people think of the old version of VMware did, it's called binary patching, which is where you take the instructions that the virtual machine is passing to the processor, and you have to swap out certain,
You swap out certain instructions, the ones that are actually trying to control the hardware. You intercept them, yeah.
Right.
That sounds a bit fucking Larry, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, exactly.
Oh, yes.
And it's slow, because you have to catch the instructions, rewrite them to something that is safe to run. And then pass the results.
So the guest DOS says, okay, I'd like to overwrite that bit of RAM. And then you catch it and go, ha ha ha, you're not actually going to overwrite that bit of RAM because you're not really in control of the machine. I'll pretend that you've overwritten that bit of RAM and then come back to you or something.
Okay, so
you're essentially emulating hardware in software. This is how things like Commodore 64 emulators work.
Yes, and they're slow.
Right. Okay.
Well, they're a lot faster than the Commodore 64, but
I thought that all this VT shite made that process easier, but it doesn't at all. It's a different thing entirely.
Power virtualization. Basically, you rewrite the operating system to not do that stuff.
Yeah. So it already knows.
So it already knows that it's not running on real hardware.
That's what most people think of as being Zen. VMware ESX server.
You recompile the kernel.
Okay, so, right, now, we've got that far, but I'm now bored of hearing names of things. Why do I give a shit about any of this?
Right, as I was saying earlier.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that what you were about to ask as well?
I was just going to say that I always thought that virtualization was basically you create a piece of software that emulates a processor, and that's about it. This is a lot more fucking complicated than I thought it was.
It has got a lot more complicated in the last couple of years, because that was what you used to do, basically. Full virtualization, the old version of VMware, basically, you run a user land application which runs an operating system in it and provides software.
Yeah.
Implementation.
Right. But it's dog slug.
It's all blurring the lines, isn't it? Because now the hardware supporting virtualization. So what's real has gone out the window now. It's like the bloody Matrix.
Right. So the reason why you two guys would care, if you're not messing with the servers, is because it allows you to do one or two things, which is you can play with a different operating system.
Right.
Like you can run Windows on your on your Linux machine. You can run Linux on your Windows machine. You can basically just play with new operating systems that you don't have a machine to dedicate to.
Now, I have a question about this.
Yes.
I've heard that you can run... I've heard that you can basically run applications with enough virtualization around them, so you just run the application.
I know this.
This is a parallels question, isn't it?
So, how does that work?
Right,
because I don't care about running Windows, but I might care about running Photoshop.
Yeah.
And I don't care
about
why.
So the idea is that under the covers there is actually Windows, but you're not booting into a Windows environment and then starting up Photoshop inside the window. Right. You're just going, run Photoshop, and it quietly starts up Windows
it's
in
like
the back.
It's a rootless session sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right. Now, maybe you're able to answer this better. I know enough about this to tell you that basically that's Parallels, by the way.
That's what Parallels does.
SWSoft Parallels, which is where I don't know for certain whether it loads the whole virtual machine environment in the background and then just displays the Windows on your host machine, or whether it's just loading enough to be able to run the application you want to run and then displaying it on your host system.
So
but that's called is coherence mode, which is where you see, it's most common, I've seen my boss do it on the Mac, which is you are seeing a Windows application with Windows screen window decoration, but it's on a Mac desktop.
Right.
And that's what that is. That's
can it. We do that in the free software world?
Off the top of my head, I don't think...
Can we do it on top of a free software operating system? You might find it's VMware, which is not free. But
I don't think there are any products for virtualization on Linux that allows us to do coherence mode.
Right. I suppose in theory, you could do it yourself. You should take Linux and strip it down until it's just the basics.
It's for that huge demographic of people who want to run Gedit on Windows.
Well, I'm thinking of...
I think there's a lot of demographic people who want to run Photoshop on Linux, to be
honest
with you.
Well, that's what I was thinking,
yeah. And so, which surprises me why you can't make this work on Windows. On Linux, rather.
Yeah, I mean, it must be possible. I've seen the macOS doesn't offer anything, or Apple Harbor doesn't offer anything magic.
I think it's quite doable. It's just that nobody has.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Parallels thing rather than a Mac thing or a Windows thing.
Doesn't VMware Fusion do it? The VMware Mac product? I think it does.
I think that's what Fusion does, yeah.
Well, one more question, then. I've used VMware Player and QEMU in the past to test out new operating systems.
Yep.
You know,
right.
New release, something comes out. I tried it with things like Symfony OS and so on. Well, I don't want to dedicate a whole machine to it. I'll just download it, you know, run it in a VMware Player instance or in a QEMU instance, and that's fine. Now, Xen presumably would let me install a Xen hypervisor and then install my main operating system as one of the guests.
Yeah.
Right, and then running that all the time. And then I could just go, I'll create a new Xen instance and put another one in it. Right. So if I want to test Symfony, also I'd put it in another Xen instance rather than running in QEMU in a window on my desktop.
Yeah.
So the two things are, is that a good idea? And if I left it running, is it just going to sit there and eat RAM and be annoying? Or does it kind of share the RAM or something?
In VMware and Xen, you predefine the amount of RAM you want your virtual machine to use. So, for example, I'm playing with an 8 gig of RAM machine, and I'd say, give this virtual machine 512 meg of RAM.
It's not your Uber laptop, is it?
No, it's not. Shut up.
8 gigabytes?
This is a server.
Jesus.
I've been playing
real machines.
How much RAM has your Uber laptop got?
It's only a gig. Because I thought, right, by the time I want more RAM, I'll just go and buy it, because it'll be cheaper. Mm. Admittedly, my laptop manufacturer, who I won't name, makes it very, very cheap. Okay, but if you buy anything from Dell, all the extra bits and pieces you can buy at the point of purchase are a lot cheaper than buying them afterwards. But I'll worry about that problem when 1 gig of RAM isn't enough anymore.
Back to the question, however.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, you allocate these virtual machines and you say, I want them all to have 512 meg of RAM, right?
Yeah.
Now, you can over-allocate your RAM.
So
if you have, say, a gig of RAM on your machine, you can have three virtual machines and say they all have 512.
As long as only
as long as they're not all using it.
Well, I mean, the reason I think this would be handy is that, you know, my machine runs Ubuntu. And that would go Ubuntu, and that's fine. But it might be handy to have other things dotted around, so I can have
absolutely the point of it for you.
You know, a Fedora thing there. If Fedora does something better, I can just go, bang, switch to the Fedora thing with some kind of Uber version of Alt-Tab, which switches in between virtual machines, and then do the Fedora thing. You know, or I can have two Ubuntu ones, one of which is running the CVS version of GStreamer.
They would both be running at the same time. But if it's not doing anything, it just sits there and doesn't use your CPU.
I know you want to speak. You still got to have a host operating system, which is the master one. You don't just be able to change your machine from running one operating system to another. But what you do, I mean, you're able to full screen your virtual machine, so it looks like you're using the virtual machine as the entire machine.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Can I ask one more question?
Mm-hmm.
People are using, particularly with VMware VMware images in the player, and people are using it to test software. I know the KD team have started doing that a lot recently.
Yeah, virtual appliance, they call it, isn't it?
Is there a means of kind of automatically updating these appliances. So could I, you know, if I download an appliance, the next time a new appliance comes out, without updating it within the machine, can I, in the same way I could subscribe, you know, I could have an apt repository. And whenever there's a new package comes to me, can I do that with appliances?
Do you mean keep all your existing settings, that kind of thing?
And kind of keep the same, well, not necessarily keep the same settings, but just so I can constantly stay up to date with new images. So if I decide to myself, I want to test the new KD4 images, and let's say they do daily right. images, and you know.
Yeah, I mean, if they produce disk images, basically, is what you.
Yeah.
Then you can just download it and, you know, overwrite your previous disk.
But can I get it so it does it automatically?
Just double, you're getting a cron job, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah. I'm trying to think, you know, you could theoretically do that for keeping up to date with packages, but I'm talking about...
I guess if they put them together as an apt repository, then you could get it.
Right.
Yeah, but people aren't doing that.
Oh, I'm not sure there's an implicit means. Right.
There's one more thing I wanted to say. I mean, I was prepared to discuss the kind of four main types of virtualization, which we've kind of done, but one I haven't mentioned is relevant to a topic we were just discussing, which is resource limits. The other type of virtualization is what's called containers, which is OpenVZ and Virtuoso are examples of those.
And Sun, whatever Sun, it's called.
Something that I've got.
Yeah, I'll fit on with
it. Sun Zones, containers? I think.
Oh, Zones. That's what
I think it might be. And BSD Jails.
Yeah.
But I know for Virtuoso, which is a commercial version of OpenVZ, containers are essentially, they all run inside a separate environment, but they run on the host system kernel.
Right.
So
this is like UML used to be.
No.
No.
I don't know UML, actually, only from what I was...
UML, it runs a separate Linux kernel, right?
Whereas in user space.
In user space. You compile your own kernel. I was doing this yesterday. Whereas containers, you basically partition off and say, this application can use 10% of my CPU and 10% of my RAM, but it's using the same actual kernel.
Oh, right, so
it just has fixed limits.
So instead of the containers being on top of the processor, they're on top of the kernel. You've only got one kernel.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, one kernel, and you just partition up its resources and say, you can have that, and it appears to that process as if it's running on its own.
Essentially what it is...
But it's only getting...
Essentially what it is, it's a manageable cheroot on steroids. Running all of which are running on the host kernel, and what OpenVZ and Virtuoso make it easy to set kind of hard and soft memory limits, so they can actually go above what you allocate in the first place to a certain point.
Okay, is the answer to the question which one of these should I use? It depends.
Yeah,
for what you want. Okay. server virtualization, you want probably a fast performing product, which is you're looking at. I think Power Virtualization is the one at the moment.
If you want to run different operating systems like Windows and Linux, or you know, Fedora and Ubuntu, then you want Zen, essentially, because it allows you to run different operating systems. If you just want if you want to host, you know, 20 different people on your machine, but they all have the same kernel version, containers.
Right. I think it's safe to say, you know, like, since we've been doing Lug Radio, how many episodes now? 89, I think? 89. We very rarely do any research, and I think all of the research we should have done has been executed by Adam and Chris. So good work, guys.
Good job,
that was
chaps.
Really useful.
But we could talk about virtualization for hours.
This is why we're closing the segment now.
People who are actually doing this kind of thing, write in and tell us what you're using, why you chose it.
Yeah.
Because I personally am intrigued, but I don't know enough about this.
I can tell you all about RESX clustered setup, but I won't worry about
that. show@lugradio.org is the email address to write to.
Yep, or post to the forums.
Good work, guys.
At the risk of keep doing and another thing, I think, if you want to just play with other operating systems on your desktop, you probably want to play with QEMU or VMware Server or something like that.
Recently, there's been a reasonable amount of noise on a particular forum that I read about people posting dangerous things for people to do. You've got you've got newbies coming to the forum and saying things like, I really like all this 3D stuff. And then people are following up with, it's easy. It's really easy to install Compiz. Just type sudo rm-rf/, right? Now, obviously the forum administrators take a really, really dim view of this kind of thing.
No.
And understandably. And they unleash the mighty nuclear boot on anyone they catch doing it. And they're banned from the forums and all that kind of thing. And they'll go through and weed out posts like that. But there's kind of a larger topic there. Dan Stone, one of the ex-hackers, once said...
Here we go. Is this the legendary Dan Stone comment again?
I love
it. I tell you what, you take the piss on my fucking paper sizes thing. You reference his fucking statement all the time.
I do, because it is wisdom. Your paper size guy is just nutter.
You and ready? It is. Here we go.
Here it is. It is. You can't enshrine don't be a tool into a code of conduct. Which is quite right.
The man's not wrong, to be fair.
So, one of the things I was thinking about is... How much of a problem is this? What can be done about it? Is there anything? I mean, are we limiting people's freedom of speech by telling them, no, you can't tell people to cat dev zero over dev SDA?
Yeah, but
when they ask for help.
This is all, you know, freedom of speech is all very well, but you don't have the right to shout fire in a crowded theatre.
Yeah.
I think the thing is, I mean, this is something that, I was discussing with some other people a few weeks ago. And, the way I see it, to kind of like put the, to kind of put the problem in its place, is that a lot of these people go to these forums and they find how-tos and things like that, and they blindly cut and paste these comments, these commands into a shell. And what they do is many of these commands are prefixed with sudo, and they blindly do this. So basically what they're doing is you're giving some random on the internet root access to your machine, which is a huge security problem.
Paul,
and the thing is, people have no idea because they don't know what the commands mean. But so long as they get the desired outcome. But a lot of these how-tos that can appear on all different forums on the internet.
See, everyone should learn how to use the command line.
Full of shit.
Life would be so much safer.
Paul Vixie, the guy who invented VixieCron, once said, if I can get you to sue and then say something on your machine, then you have a very serious security problem and you should look into it.
I think the problem we've got now is we're getting to the stage where we're getting, I don't mean to be offensive by saying this, but we're getting a lot of clueless noobs. And a lot of them are coming from the Windows.
In what way is that not offensive?
Well, no, I mean, a lot of people that don't understand the nature of what they're doing when they're pasting something into a terminal. Hold on, if you let me finish, sorry.
Yeah.
And the problem we've got is we're transferring people that have come from executing executable files in a mail program that arrive by email, claim to be from somebody they know, into people that are looking for solutions to problems they don't understand properly, and they're just pasting the answer into the shell, and they don't understand what the thing is doing. They just think this is the answer to get them what they want, and they're doing it, and they don't realise the dangers of what they're doing, blindly pasting this into a shell.
No, you see, but I think that's because people don't have intuition about what's right and what's wrong on a computer. I mean, we do. If I said to you, here's a command, run it. I mean, obviously you'd be sensible enough to think, I wonder what I'll just go look up at a man page. But even without that, you'd look at it and think, no, that to me looks dodgy because it's got a slash in it, which means it refers to my whole file system, or it's referring to a device, and that's probably weird because you've got a bit of knowledge. So people don't have that intuition about computer. Most people don't. They can't look at something and get a feel for whether it's bad. It's like going on some, you know, home electrics forum and someone says, what you need to do is you need to, in order to earth your system properly, you need to stick tin foil in it. And most people, even if they'd never heard of the idea of putting tin foil in your fuses, would think, that to me doesn't sound like a very good idea. I think I'm going to check that out. But people don't have that intuition with computers.
But I think, people think that's a bad idea, recognise the fact that that's a bad idea, because they do... They've been brought up with the idea of, you know, sticking three fingers in an electric socket is a dumb thing to do. Yeah. You get taught this by your parents when you're two, you know, because otherwise you do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, whereas people haven't been brought up with using the command line in that way.
The wider thing that worries me is not so much... Yeah, people are telling people clearly bogus commands. You know, people are saying, you know, yeah. I want to get the new version of Inkscape. Yeah, you type in RM minus RF.
Yeah, this is not people giving misleading or wrong advice. There's one. This is people being actively malicious.
The thing is, that's clearly bogus. And to be fair, I think that happened. That's a relative rarity. I don't think it happens all that often. And those people, the only solution for those people is to ban them. There's no way around it. The thing that worries me more so is something that I think is more systemic in some of these communities, which is people basically go to find a solution to a problem and they don't really care what steps they go through because it doesn't mean anything to them because they don't have that intuition. But so long as they end up with the solution, that's fine. But what happens is they're inadvertently hosing their systems in different ways. So you wouldn't believe the amount of times I've seen forums posts, and it's not just on any specific forum, it's on all different types of forums, where people actually attach packages to threads and ask people to forcefully install these packages on their systems. And I'm thinking, what the fucking hell is wrong with you people? Why are you doing this? You know, it's like, the problem is that the people fundamentally don't know that the outcome, even though the outcome seems fine, you know, whatever they want to do, they manage to get to work. But they don't know that what the steps that they're going through aren't really the right ways of doing things.
Is this just we've taught people to, that, yeah, computers, you don't have to understand what a computer actually does. You know, you just have to click some buttons and it kind of, you know, what you want happens. And so when you say on a forum post, you know, here, do this, don't worry about it, you know, just do it and it'll work. People do it because we've taught them, rather than teaching people to understand the sort of what things are all about, you know.
Yeah, but fundamentally, I mean, we could theoretically take, and I don't mean to make you sound like I'm a bad person, but we could take the fucking high horse and say everybody should know what they're doing. But people wouldn't get anywhere with computers if that was the case, because...
No, but there's limits. Yeah, okay, people don't have to understand, John, of exactly what's going on, but people really ought to understand the basics.
I think the problem is the language of solving a problem is that fundamentally, because we have such a powerful command line, we can basically give people a recipe that solves the problem. So we can say to people, imagine we didn't have the command line. We'd basically be saying to people, okay, you need to click on this, and then click on this, and then click on this, and people would go through the steps that are relevant, but we can bypass all of those steps by getting them to use the command line.
I mean, it's essentially, if you, Chris, want, because you think, I know what I'm doing, I want a way that I, in one command, can do something like wipe out a whole partition because I want to and I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
There's no way we can provide that command for you and not provide it for everybody else. You can't make people pass a test or take off their learner drivers thing. But, I mean,
have to provide the command that does that, but then you... I just saying to people, oh, don't worry about what these, you know, about commanders.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine a world, for example, where you don't set up... You make it so 95% of what people need to do on their machine can be done without being root, and therefore you don't set up sudo by default. So all these commands where you say sudo this, you, Chris, you, yeah, Adam, you, John, oh, me, will go in and set up sudo for ourselves because we know we need to be root occasionally. But our ordinary people, they need that little bit of knowledge in order to get that or something. But then essentially you're getting to the point where you're saying, powerful stuff is for us, it's not for noobs.
Yeah, and
it's a bit unfair.
And what you're saying as well is that you're basically saying if we restrict the use of sudo and educate people that anytime you see sudo in a command, you need to be wary.
Yes.
People aren't going to know one way or the other what they're being wary about because they don't have the knowledge. And people are still going to, you know, in many cases, people are desperate to get this thing to work. You know, my fucking X isn't working. I need, you know, and then they see a solution to their problem and it involves them, you know, sudo doing something. They're so desperate to get their machine back up and running.
The thing is, I think we're getting to the stage where we've got this, that, ever-widening user base of people that are new to Linux, and maybe they've learned some of the security risks on Windows. You don't double-click an executable when it's got two extensions on it, like, I don't know, whatever.
Like, .x, you know, .txt, .pif.
In an email.
Whatever, yeah.
But you can't... They're coming to Linux, and it's an entirely new thing, and I think a lot of people, they get the compulsion that they really want this thing to work so much so that they're willing to take the risk that not really understanding what they're typing in. And I can't see any way of protecting people from themselves without starting to wrap
maybe
command.
People on forum should just explain what they're talking about a bit more.
You could say that, but people could say the wrong things, and many of the people I suspect who write the post don't actually really know what they're talking about.
Is this a symptom of the fact that in every 100,000 people involved in anything, you'll have 100 people who don't know what they're doing but are prepared to do anything to make something work, and one person who's a dick? Yeah. And therefore, because we now have more people, it's more likely that we'll get a dick or two. I mean, I spoke to people on other forums and said, is this a problem for you on other Linux forums? They said, well, no, not really, to be honest with you. But maybe that's because as the community grows, you know, if 1 in 100,000 people is a dick and there are 20 million, 25 million Linux users or whatever, then there are going to be however many dicks there are. 250.
I think the only partial solution to this problem, and something that we've been discussing in the Ubuntu community, is certifying content on forums. You know, there's some really great content on the Ubuntu forums, and it's basically saying, could we have a small team of people on those forums who know what they're talking about, who go through and basically tick a how-to basically say this works well, this is something you can have faith in. But it's a very you know, lethargic process. It involves a lot of man and woman power for that to happen. You know, and I don't think there's really other than wider awareness of, you know, be careful what you do.
I don't think there's any easy way of protecting people. Bear in mind, people are always the weakest link in any security chain. Yes. I don't think that on Linux, I don't think there's an easy way of protecting people from running dangerous commands without wrapping the command in a security warning. So, warning, you are about to run
the RM
command.
So this goes back to kind of education then, surely. To educate these people that RM means remove.
Yeah, well, as I was going to say, you can't wrap these commands. The only other way is wrapping the commands in a warning, and all of a sudden you've got Windows. It's warning you are about to run the RM.
You can't allow Chris to do dangerous stuff and prevent punters from doing dangerous stuff at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, the distinction there is that you should need to be root to do these things, but a lot of people are just running everything as sudo and not considering that sudo is inherently a dangerous thing to do if you don't know what you're pasting in. I was thinking the other day, what actually are my motivations for spending all of my time using Linux? I spend 3/4 of the waking hours of every day.
Yeah.
Running Linux, be it at work, big at home, I spend all my time doing it. So I could be doing something else. So I'm just wondering what my motivations were for doing that.
Mm.
And we've identified, say, 5 personality traits in people that cause people to tend to gravitate towards Linux and spend all their time doing that kind of thing. People that really are doing it as a lifestyle thing.
Yeah.
And I think we also thought that perhaps the 4 of us map quite nicely across those personality traits in varying levels.
Yes.
And this leads me to think that this maps quite nicely onto
live from Wolverhampton, it's Log Radio Top Trumps!
Welcome to Log Radio Top Trumps, in which we will be assessing each of the Log Radio presenters in 5 different ways. And you can pick your favourite and how they approach the free software community. Those 5 categories are, number 1... Freedom Crusaders. Is this person a crusader for freedom? Is this person out there to spread the free software message? Number 2, tinkering. Do these people like to tinker and play with software? Do they like to press buttons and play with grip switches? Number 3, does this person support the underdog? The underdog. The person who likes to, be the underdog, really. I haven't really got much more to say about being an underdog. I just like saying the word underdog. The 4th person is going to be communitization. Oh yes, it's my favourite word, communitization. Do they like the free software community? Do they like the community and everything the community holds dear in the community? And finally, are they cheap? Is freedom and freedom in terms of beer and getting things for free, as opposed to, you know, all that ethical, moral bullshit, is that important to them as well? So, Graham, over to you for our first contestant.
Our contestant this week is Chris from Birmingham!
Woo! Yay!
Chris's scores! Chris scores for Freedom Crusading... 3! For Tinkering, Chris scores... 9! For Underdoge... Chris scores... 5! For communitization of the community using community tools to promote community tools, Chris scores 3! And finally, for cheapness, Chris scores 7!
So Chris, more so than anything else, you're a tinkerer.
Yeah,
I just... Thief.
No, I enjoy a tinkerer, not a tinker. A tinkerer.
Thief.
So, Chris, more so than anything, you're a bit of a tinkerer. You're a technologist more than anything else.
Yeah, I enjoy taking things apart to see how they work.
Other people's things.
Other people's things, my own things, I really don't care. It's not that important to me.
So what is it about tinkering that makes it the most important thing for you? I mean, this is clearly the highest score in the Chris props the top trump card.
This is kind of like a fundamental personality trait to me. I mean, I did astrophysics at university, so I could take the universe apart and see how that worked.
You didn't actually take it apart, though, did you?
They wouldn't let me. Unless I could prove I could put it back together.
Did you not have the funding or something?
You're not split atoms, then.
Strangely enough, no, the research council wasn't giving me enough money.
But so this is a thing you've done always. You're interested in how stuff fits together.
Yeah, I mean, I played with Lego when I was a kid, Lego and Meccano, and then, yeah, I've always been interested in how things work, why they work the way they do, and that kind of, you know, the fundamental building blocks that, you know, I do like. worrying about what those switches are on GREP and why you need them.
So why are you fiddling about with GREP rather than building your own car?
Because I'm completely, what's the word? Useless when it comes to mechanical things, really.
Right, okay.
So the interest is there, but the talent isn't.
Sorry, just to go on and move, I don't want to move away from what we're talking about now, but there's another point. I mean, one of your other high scoring items there was cheap, and I guess playing with Linux is cheaper than building a car.
Yeah, Frears and Beer has kind of a bad reputation, I think, but it actually is a major motivation in the sense that, you know, if I'm interested in something, I can download the software, I can try it out, I can play around with it, and then when I get bored, I can, you know, delete it. Yeah. Whereas if I'm having to pay large amounts of money for that, then I wouldn't bother.
So you love tinkering with things, and the fact that you can get those things for free, and the tools to tinker with,
gives means me the opportunity
you've got a playground of stuff.
Yeah, you know, if I want to learn C, say, I can download GCC, and I can play with it for, you know, a week or so, and then I can move on to the next thing and not think, ooh, I've just wasted, you know, £200 investment in a
compiler. The Microsoft, you know, with Steve Ballmer jumping about on stage saying, developers, they're doing their best to try and make that kind of environment available to people where you can get things and play with them and so on. So it's not necessarily the freedom of the software right the way down to the ground level. It's that you can get hold of this stuff and play with it.
It's like putting the tools in your
hands. I like the fact that if I care about the NBD driver in the kernel, I can get the source code and read through it and go, ah, that's why it works like that, or that's a clever kind of trick, or that kind of stuff as well. It's not just being able to use the software, it's actually understanding how it works.
As the resident tinkerer. You are resident tinkerer, you're representing the tinkering hordes.
Right.
Never said that before.
Representing the tinkering community.
Right. You are the poster child of the tinkering community, right?
Oh, I'm scared.
Okay. would you say that, having the opportunity to do that actually outweighs the amount that you do that? I mean, would you say that the fact that you could go and grab the source code for this driver or that driver, you don't actually do it that often, but the fact that you've got that opportunity is a real buzz. Would you say you actually make use of this privilege?
I do make use of it, not to the extent that, you know, kind of in my sound, you know. I have read the source code for the NBD driver, and it was quite interesting.
I think you're one of very few.
Was that the BRD driver?
Sure, it was interesting. I think you might be one of few people that say the NBD driver source was interesting.
Yeah, it's quite short, so it's quite easy to read. But yeah, you know,
more of a novella then.
But the fact that I can look at it is interesting, and the fact that if I really cared, I could download, you know, I don't know, the GIMP source code and read that, or I could download the GCC source code and learn how compilers work and how to make a really good compiler, if I cared.
As far as gravitating specifically towards Linux and open source in general, do you think a tinkerer and not exclusive to Linux? For us, I know you've run.
I've run BSD before. Yeah. Besides, for the same reason, really. I want to know kind of what's the difference between BSD, you know, OpenBSD and Linux. I downloaded it and gave it a go.
Interested in it from kind of an intellectual, just sort of fiddle about with it.
I don't contribute a lot to these projects. Kind of take them apart. That's interesting.
Are you someone who's more interested in playing with stuff than actually having stuff that's useful? So, I mean, are you the kind of person that will have a garage full of shit that's completely unuseful, unusable in different ways, and not actually have anything that's of any use on your computer?
My computer works, but generally.
In other words, you do
generally speaking,
work.
I mean, I really don't care about, you know, compies and making my desktop work particularly. I don't, you know, I care about, you know, how does it work? Does it work that way and not
so
that
usability
way?
Is just a death metal band from Russia to
kind of.
It's interesting because there's an awful lot of people, among them our own John O'Bacon, who refer to technology as technology's sake as a kind of disparaging thing. But I think, you know, fiddling with technology for technology's sake is fun.
I think it's a disparaging thing.
You certainly do.
You have said that today.
In a disparaging way.
I asked if sometimes people use technology for technology's sake. I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that. It's not for me, but
shameful misrepresentation of your own viewpoint. But I mean,
I think you lie.
I remember when I was a kid plugging things into the parallel port and making like an LED light up, and there's no point to that, and I never intended to change it so
fucking cool,
so
isn't it?
Yeah, I never intended to change it so my computer could open the curtains in my house. It just the very fact of typing in a program out of the back of input and having it work on the computer was in itself inherently an interesting thing, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. It's kind of, you do it and it works, and who cares if it actually kind of...
Making cool shit happen in your own house. It's like a chemistry set approach to stuff, isn't it?
Yeah,
like you've got all of the chemicals available to you. You can do what you want, and you can... So if you want to make LSD, you can.
I have a bunch of programs sat on my laptop that I've kind of half-finished because I did the interesting bit, which was figuring out how to get them to work, and then kind of the actual making them work.
Ironing out the bugs and
Making it user-friendly and...
Making it so you don't have to set this and that option.
Even tarring it all up and putting it on the internet was just not interesting enough for me.
I entirely sympathise with that viewpoint.
Some people in the in other camps, such as the Freedom Conquering camp, may say that you're in it for the wrong reasons. What would you say to defend the tinkering, United Tinkering States of Tinkering?
I say, where do they get off telling me my reasons are wrong? You know, frankly.
The Freedom Crusaders may have been...
No, I mean, free software allows me to do these things, but it's a means to an end. It's not an end in itself,
right.
To me, at least, you know.
Right.
If all software was proprietary, I couldn't play.
Right, so I wanted to make clear at this point that, I mean, here we're using Chris as the example of a tinkerer and a technologist.
He's the poster child.
Yeah. This is not supposed to be a fucking mutual masturbation session where we pat each other on the back and tell each other we're great and discuss how we like doing things. I mean, we're really using Chris as the example of of person.
There's a lot of people out in the community who do have the similar reasons for me.
Can you channel your tinkering hordes to send an email to us?
They might have to write an SMTP server first or something.
And then next time, we'll talk about someone else and the things that they find interesting. So listen in for that.
So it's time for the emails.
It certainly is.
And we've had lots of exciting...
Sorry, that was a little bit serious there.
Sorry, we're using legacy digital... We're using legacy digital technology this week. Once again, they're on Jono's monitor in front of us, so it's a bit awkward.
Yeah, someone didn't print out the emails, did they?
Oh, he was busy. Plus, I didn't see you print them out.
We're recording on a Saturday of all the times for you not to be busy. It's today.
Sorry, I'll rephrase slightly. I was busy and I wasn't at work, and therefore I'd had to pay for the printing myself.
Yeah. Plus, basically, that's what it is you had to...
So, Jono, why didn't you use your new printer that you're going to buy off your mate for it?
I'm not buying it off my mate. That's my point from earlier on.
Doesn't mean you can't print on it, though, does it?
I'm not going to use this printer and then give it back to him.
Well, what's it
been soiled by my lug radio fetishes?
Why is it in your living room then? Why don't you just say I don't want it and give it straight back to him when he gave it to you? Did a pigeon deliver it?
Because I haven't seen him yet. Anyway,
you haven't seen him? Did you just find it in the boot of your car or something?
Who gave you
the printer?
I haven't seen it since the bassist came over, and I've been ill all week. Anyway, we're digressing. Emails, please.
Sorry,
emails.
I thought this was the boot general in the spud segment.
No, this is the get on with the fucking email segment. So,
get on with the fucking email.
Christoph?
Oh, am I starting?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Okay, right. We've had one from, who's it? Stephen English.
He's called... very English, you know.
Quite Stephen-y as well.
That doesn't even make sense.
No.
Hello, I'm Stephen English. Slowly, and I'm very English, you know.
Slowly I feel the foundations of this segment beginning to
fall apart, yes.
Okay. Sorry, carry on. Speak of Senglish.
I've lost my thread completely now.
Anyway,
student robotics, he says. Basically, he says we're interested in talking to people who are using free software in interesting ways, which we are.
We are, indeed.
Student robotics definitely qualifies, he says. www.studentrobotics.org. Project organised by the engineering students at Southampton University to let people engage in engineering, basically by building robots, which is
it's not bad,
cool.
Is it really?
I'm interested.
Desktop corner of the room, looking all bored.
I'm reading the email. It's interesting how he says, we're not robot wars, that's just remote controlled cars with axes welded on.
It's a fair point.
And he's not wrong, to be honest with you.
No.
Yeah, no, we're the intellectual side of robotics.
the interesting side of robotics.
Sorry, artificially intelligent controlled onboard vision system kind of clever robots driving around. Do you think this is any relation to like the robot soccer they do?
RoboCup,
that's the one. Yeah, that's well cool.
It is very cool.
Yeah.
They don't make IBOs anymore.
Fourth goal classified. But presumably, you're glad that they don't make IBOs anymore, because otherwise you'd have had to buy one and then not use it, much like the previous IBO and the Robo Sapien.
I'm not going to deny it, to be honest.
But they're doing loads of interesting stuff by the sound of things. I mean, if you're interested in this kind of the idea of proper robots rather than stupid robots shaped like a door wedge on Robot Wars.
It basically sounds like, engineering student is going into sixth form colleges and helping them build robots, and then if Jono hadn't just strolled too far down, then Easter they'll have a competition between them, basically. It sounds pretty cool.
It sounds very cool.
I'm interested in that.
The really interesting thing I thought about it is that the thing that actually runs the robot is a Linksys NSLU2, the little firewall thing. I've got one of them, and you plug USB hard drives into
a slug.
They call it the slug. And they're using one of those, and they're like £30 on eBay. That's how much mine was.
Cheapest decent performance ARM board you'll find, he says, in fact.
Yeah, with a standard USB webcam as it's
Linux and, yeah.
I love robotics, but we've given this email too much attention. Shall we move on?
I think we should.
Should we go around the... I'll tell you what, Mr. Sweet, you can go next if you want.
Thank you very much. I don't know what you're going to give me yet.
That one.
Okay, we've
butt
got
plug.
An email from... Shut up.
Butt plug.
So we've got an email from Julian Goodwin, who's asking us to give a plug for... shut up.
Butt plug.
For LinuxConf Australia. And that's linux.conf.au. When's that happening? Where is it? All I can see is 1999 at the moment.
It doesn't actually say. When's LCA?
Says late January in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia, it says.
Where does it say that?
Top line.
Oh, yeah.
So I think, this is a bit too far away for me to read accurately, but I see a couple of names. Donna Benjamin, who's the team lead, and Rusty Russell, who's a well-known kernel developer and created the first LCA.
He bankrolled it on his card, Rusty Russell.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He's a very, very, very cool guy, Rusty Russell.
I've never met him, but he does sound like
he's a very, very cool
guy. It's one of the biggest Linux conferences around.
Yep.
A lot of people go to it.
Which is
very good.
I don't know whether that's just because Australia's more... isolated than the rest of it.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
be honest.
He says, of course, we'd love to have all of you down to keep Jono in his place, which I'm absolutely all in favour of, apart from the fact that it's 18 million miles away. And, you know...
Yeah, it's...
If the tickets are in the post, we're on the plane. Speak the word.
Yeah, it's... you do kind of... Unlike most conferences, you do weigh up that, how much do I want to go compared to how much do I want deep vein thrombosis?
Do I want to spend 24 hours just on a plane? But thank you, Julian Goodwin. Yes, yep. If you're anywhere near LCA or you've got an unlimited travel budget, then go to LCA. It's apparently a really good conference.
Yes,
linux.conf.au, by the way.
Are you going this year?
I'm not going this year, no. I can't fit it in. So,
didn't fancy deep vein thrombosis then?
No, I don't have time to go. And it is a very good conference, and if you can get there, absolutely go. So, next.
Cool, next one. A guy called Richard Bailey has mailed us, but he's not the only one, saying, guys, I really like your show, and I got an iRiver to get my podcast in OGG, and last season it worked fine. I think you must have upgraded your OGG codec, because now my player can't play your OGGs, and I have to get your MP3s. Why doesn't it work when everyone else's podcasts work in OGG? And... it's not so much that we've upgraded our OGG codec as we've downgraded the intelligence of the person doing it. Because it used to be Matt and now it's me. We've had the problem with both OGGs and MP3s, and I have repeatedly asked for help on the forums to say, this is the command line I'm using for OGGENC and for LAME. Tell me what's wrong with it. Now, some chap did help me out on the forums, and I'm very grateful for that. But if you have a problem with these things, please, 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 go to forums.lagradio.org and look at the thread about what I'm doing, and then tell me what I'm doing wrong, and I'll fix it. But
there must be some audio gimps out there who know a lot about this.
I mean, the key point is, I'm generating an OGG, it plays in Totem, I don't have an iRiver, so I can't test it. iRiver people, if you'd like to send me an iRiver, I will happily test it. Anyone sends me any free audio hardware, I'll make damn sure Lug Radio works on it. Other than that, I have to rely on the community, guys, so please... if it's not working for you, help me out, because I want to fix it.
Or will it be like the Jocosha on the Nokia 770, and will it just sit
there?
we've had an email from Anthony Prince, who who sends us an email saying, "Dear Logredo, I'm not even going to try and be witty with a whimsical opening line. You're doing well so far, my friend. So I'll get straight to the point. Listening to your show, I've always heard discussion over how Linux compares to, say, Microsoft products, or how it compares to Apple products, or even other Linux distributions. However, I was wondering what the general consensus was amongst battle-hardened Unix people. Let me explain. I work as a Unix and Linux sysadmin for an evil megacorp, and I come into contact with people who have been in the Unix world for years. When I ask such folk about Linux, I'm taken back by the general scoffing, sniggering, general holier-than-thou attitude towards some Unix that some Unix professionals have towards Linux. I receive comments such as, "Linux? Oh, you mean that free Unix wannabe? Or a free Unix clone can't perform well as..." blah, 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 blah. Fair enough, people have their views, but I had an interesting discussion today about Linux watering down the bona fide Unix skill set. So he's basically saying, why don't we talk about Unix, and what do we think about that? I can sum up my knowledge of Unix in this sentence. Fuck all.
I'm broadly, when I think about, you know, big iron Unix on big expensive servers, I'm basically of the opinion that 15 years from now, all the people who use it will be dead. And so it'll go away, and then we'll never have to think about it again. there may be some HP UX admins out there thinking, "What? No, fuck off."
I mean, these people who get holier-than-thou about Unix, I mean, come on.
I mean, it may be...
Oh, I'm going to get holier-than-thou about computer technology that's ancient and crusty.
Well, no, I mean...
The whole point of computer technology is that it should be current and up-to-date.
I want to point out, the Open Solaris people would say that Solaris is better.
Yeah, well, yeah. Fuck them.
I think one of the things we were talking about earlier, when we were talking about the things that drew Chris into Linux and the Unix world and what have you, yeah. And one of the things we said was cost. Putting tools in your hands that are cost-free. And the fact is that HP UX, AIX, and Solaris, discounting Open Solaris, are not cost-free. I'm quite happy to spend some time playing with HP UX or AIX, a big iron Unix, if I had a machine that it would run on, they're not cost-free, so...
Yeah,
I mean... If you want us to use these things, basically, send us Superdomes.
I'd like to apologise to the Open Solaris people for telling them to fuck off, because they actually fit in with the open-source way of doing things, and they're creating a more Unix-y operating system. Hmm. But these old Unix vendors, I mean... It's the crusty old way of doing things.
And Anthony Price here does say, on the flip side of this, I find it rather odd that a lot of Unix pros go home from their sysadmin profession and sit down to a Windows machine to browse the web and access email, which is a very good point.
My brother falls into this category in the fact that he's like, I like Unix, and he loves Unix, and he loves Linux, but not on his desktop. He believes it is a great server operating system, but not on his desktop. Says, if he wants a good desktop, he uses Windows. And he's very firm in that. He's completely behind Linux and free software, and completely behind the concept of it, but he thinks, you know, if he wants a working desktop, he uses Windows. I mean, and I don't think he's particularly alone in his viewpoint.
So essentially, our view on, commercial big iron Unix boils down to, we don't know much about it, yes?
We've never had a chance to play with it. If you want to give us a chance, send us some kit. We're quite happy to play.
Or finding that if you know about it, Anthony Price and so on, give us your views on it.
Because we don't know. Absolutely.
Tell us who we should interview, or what we should talk about, or how we should find out about this, and then Adam and Chris will do some research.
thanks.
Adam will do some research.
I was going to say, certainly Hewlett-Packard and IBM, if you're thinking of giving away evaluation hardware and software, then certainly I am willing.
What were you just saying you were after, Mr. Sweet?
What, blowjob?
Weren't you after some kind of laptop?
The Tadpole people.
Yeah, send us some Spark laptops.
I don't know why, whether it's morbid curiosity or not, I've always wanted to play with a Spark laptop, and I looked and they're like $3,500.
Yeah. That's why we don't have them.
That's not an outrageous amount, mate.
It is when it's my money.
It's a lot of money, but it's only £1,700. That's only a top-end IBM or Dell machine.
It's a pretty fucking
top-end IBM or a Dell.
That's
$3,500.
Yeah. $3,500. £1,700.
I mean, that's marginally more than I spent on my existing laptop now, but it's still a hell of a lot of money just to jizz on a single point of interest, flippant, let's have a play with this for half an hour, and then that was cool. I really would like to play with a Spark laptop, just to see how it feels.
I'm glad you would.
Spark chips are open hardware now, so presumably you could build your own one with, like, transistors and stuff.
Me and Jono were talking about the Arduino earlier, which is like a little hardware device thing that you use for hardware hacking. It's an open source project, and so maybe I'll make one out of an Arduino.
You're going to make a Spark laptop out of it. I think you might want to make one out of 4,000 Arduinos. Yeah.
Maybe you will. Christoph?
Back to me.
I'm afraid so.
As we're using legacy digital technology here, I must point out that Chris is getting all the long emails, and he's the hardest possibility of actually being able to read it.
Completely the wrong angle to actually read any of these. But email titled Microsoft Open Source Lab from Trent Waddington.
That's Quantum G on the forums.
Is it? Oh, cool. It says, you retards seem to... Good way to open an email, by the way. You retards. seem to think that Microsoft's open source lab exists to evaluate how kick-ass open source software is, or something. It isn't. It exists to ensure that all the various bits of open source that run on Windows work well on Windows. Fair enough. Cool. Typically, with proprietary software, companies have QA labs that ensure their products will run well and get half-decent performance on Windows. And contact Microsoft when the idiot Windows developers break something the Mac's already shipped products break. Yeah, some paragraphs would have been made this a lot easier to read. Sorry.
As I said, Chris is reading at a fucking crooked neck angle.
Open source developers don't do this. If an old version of an open source app doesn't work on the greatest version of Windows, stiff shit. Download the newest version of the project and hope it works better.
What the fuck does stiff shit mean?
Tough shit.
I think it's tough shit.
But cool.
I think it's a bad thing, whatever. In short, Microsoft's open source lab exists to make sure the idiot Windows developers maintain backwards compatibility with open source software because no one else will do it. I guess this is a failing of the open source community, in that we expect Microsoft to tell us to piss off if we tell them they have broken backwards compatibility.
Okay.
Fair enough. So you don't.
Okay, we were wrong about Microsoft's open source lab. I mean, interestingly, you read Raymond Chen's weblog. He's a kernel hacker, basically, for Microsoft.
I thought it was Ironside.
No. But he writes a lot about how they spend all their time caring about backwards compatibility, and they have to do all the testing because projects don't. I don't think that the open source lab exists because the open source community don't feed back to Microsoft when stuff breaks. I think no one feeds back to Microsoft when stuff breaks, when old versions of it. You know, I mean, do you think, I don't know, pick a major vendor, Intuit, who do the QuickBooks money thing, right? Do you think they test two versions ago to see whether it still works under Windows Vista? Doubt it.
Possibly, but
difficult to tell, and it's going to vary.
I kind of suspect that if OpenOffice send a bug report to Microsoft saying you've broken our product with a backwards compatibility bug, Microsoft will go, don't care.
Okay.
Fix your problem.
El Sweet. He's short and he's sweet.
So we've got an email here from Nick Griffiths, which is about...
Leader of the BNP.
Yes. No, this is Nick Griffiths, not Nick Griffin. Hi all, first of all, I'm a big fan of the show. Every other Monday night, with sitting on the train home from work, I often have to try hard not to laugh out loud, no doubt to the amusement of other passengers. Can't say I agree with Linux formats review. I think the off-topic banter, swearing and general lightheartedness is what makes it so entertaining. You rock, keep up all the good work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Enough of the brand nosing now. Well. I have a question. Okay. I was amused to see Jono's Tea Biscuits and Death Metal t-shirt in the gallery section on your website. Where did you get it from? Thanks, Nick Griffiths.
Well, my BNP
friend. Brown-nosed friend.
Brown-nosed BNP.
You can't accuse him of being a member of the BNP.
That's what BNP stands for, Brown Nose Party.
I bought it from a shop in Camden. I can't remember the name of the shop, to be honest.
It's not a T-Shirt Hell t-shirt.
No.
Oh, right,
it's an independent t-shirt producer in Camden Lock. And I walked in there with a friend one day and thought it looked incredible and picked it up. Yeah, it's one of my favourite t-shirts now. It is all the great things in life. Tea biscuits and death metal. What more could you want?
Chips.
Sorry,
a wife and family.
So yeah, somewhere it's somewhere.
Assholes.
It's somewhere in Camden Lock, but there's not many shops in there. But if you go in there, it's
Many shops there.
It's like a fucking rabbit warren.
It's in the main bit where the people sell holographic pictures and shit like that. It's in the building, not the market so much.
Okay. Is it? It's not me now. It's you.
Yeah. Me, is it? Oh, right, okay. Yeah. Mail from Mike Edwards, who mailed us last time.
Isn't that the guy who plays Mike Baldwin off Coronation Street?
That's Johnny Briggs. Who lives in Stourbridge? He lives in Stourbridge, don't you know? And he drives a Rover 75, because I saw him at the tip once.
That's your one fascinating Stourbridge fact.
No, Robert Plant comes from Stourbridge. Two fascinating Stourbridge
he doesn't
facts.
Live, he doesn't live there still, though, does he?
No, but he comes from there.
Moved away as soon as he possibly could.
Yeah. And what's the best you can manage? The bloke out of Ned's Atomic Dustbin comes from Wolverhampton. Shut up.
No, he lives in fucking Stourbridge. That's another Stourbridge pointless fact. Robert Plant lives in Charlecote Square in London.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I'm full of wisdom and facts. Did you know that the elephant
is
the only...
Is that because you're his stalker?
I just know these things. I also know that the elephant is the only animal to have four knees.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I don't care.
Except that you're wrong, because camels have as well.
Is that right?
Okay, yeah. So the email.
The email, sorry. Mike Edwards emails us to say, firstly, I'm mortified that you used my email to open the last show. It was a bitter, uncalled for, and unnecessary email for which I apologised unreservedly. Now, I ought to make clear to those people who didn't listen to it last time that he gave us a nuclear booting last time.
He gave Chris an ad.
Yeah. He did. And I thought he was entirely justified.
I seem to remember him referring to Chris as sounding like Shrek
on Valium, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what was Adam?
I just made this point for him there. And I said,
Adam, sweet.
I wish Adam would please stop saying all the time.
So thanks for your, it was uncalled for and unnecessary to use your words.
Chris and Adam, you do a great job and make Lug Radio easily the best Linux show and a hugely enjoyable listen.
You are what you drink and he's a bitter man.
I do genuinely feel bad about beating on the folks are doing such a fantastic job championing what is really important stuff, freedom. And then he goes on to say, from now on, my comments towards the open source community will be measured and, where possible, positive. Sorry, now, don't do that, right? Don't become one of these people who never says anything bad. We talked about this in a previous show, as I remember.
Yeah, just don't say anything bad to us.
It's perfectly legitimate to stick
say
the boot in.
To us.
You can stick the boot in as much as you like to Chris and Adam.
Why don't you...
Stick the boot into me, because I can take it. Obviously, these two can't.
What, so. You should what you should do instead is talk about set-top boxes that don't play video very well.
Grovelling aside, I've just put in an order for a new OSD.
Bow!
What he says is, I've been looking for the ideal Linux open source media solution for over a year, and it'd be really useful and interesting if you did a section on media player hardware, software, whatever.
Oh, that now, was buzzword-tastic, wasn't it?
Speaking for the Lug Radio team here, Chris and Adam have both got new OSDs, I think. Yep. Jono did have a Myth TV box, which he's now sacked. It often does everything through his PlayStation. And I've got a Mac Mini that I've installed Ubuntu on, but I can't get it to talk to my television. So we're not doing very well.
I've forgotten you got my Mac Mini, incidentally.
Oh, sorry, yeah, I've got Jono's Mac Mini. Yeah.
This is replacing the laptop with a proprietary graphics driver that you were using, yeah?
That's right.
Okay.
And now I'm not doing that anymore.
That's very good.
I can't get it to talk to the television. So we can't really do a comparison on it, because we're not reusing much of it.
No.
I wanted to say
don't know much about the market.
I wanted to say two things about this, really. First of all, both Chris and I have got an Aorus OSD now, and I mean, at the time I gave the review in the first show, I hadn't really had a chance to play with it, and I hadn't upgraded the firmware at that point. And since doing both...
Did you just download the wrong version?
No, it comes pre-flashed with the hot firmware on it, and it's a beta firmware.
Right, okay.
And it wasn't a particularly recent bit of firmware anyway, and I've updated the firmware since, and I'm now very happy with the Aorus OSD. It's not perfect.
Well, plays video and everything.
Yeah, it plays video perfectly.
Mine records off the telly and plays back. What more do I really want it to do?
Words
for me?
Chips?
Well,
good. Yeah, okay. You must make something that does chips for us.
The other thing I wanted to say about it is this, is, first of all, this is, again, like the fucking the Unix thing. This is quite hard to do, because that means we've actually got to go out and buy a couple of different boxes.
Yes.
Yep. Or have somebody send them to us.
Unless people want to send them to us.
We should actually encourage, I'm being serious here, this isn't just a blag for free stuff, but we should actually encourage hardware vendors to send us stuff to a review. We'll send it back if necessary. We'll preferably keep it. But, yeah.
Ideally, we'd like four.
There's a lot of people who listen to Lug Radio who are from companies who are selling products or whatever, and if you want us to do a review of your product, then by all means get in touch and let us know at show at lugradio.org.
Opening a can of worms there, I think. But
Well, we don't have to accept stuff, but...
The thing is, we ought to point out straight away, if you're even thinking about doing that, which probably most people aren't, we're not just going to do a shameless plug, so there's no point asking us to say, please can you mention our products on the show, because obviously we're not going to do that, because it's of no benefit to anybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, final email.
Is this me?
Yes.
Okay, this is from Russ Phillips.
Friend
of the show and new father. We were asking people what they're working on, and Russ has sent an email that he's working on OpenStreetMap. Hi guys, you asked what projects your listeners are working on. Lately I've been working on OpenStreetMap, a project to create a map of the world with open license, that's Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike content. The project got a mention in Season 1 when it was very, very early days. I saw a talk about it at Lug Radio Live 2006. That was from Steve Coast, if I remember rightly.
Yes.
Following which I bought a GPS and started mapping. Earlier this month, the Falkland Islands government donated data to the project.
Cool.
I've now imported the data for Stanley, the capital, and I'll be importing the rest as I get time. The map of Stanley is available at linkpot.net/Leica. That's L-I-K-E-R. And possibly of more interest is the map of Wolverhampton at linkpot.net/undershot. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean,
it's very, 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 very cool.
OpenStreetMap's legendarily brilliant. I was talking to people at work because we're thinking about putting some mapping into one of the things that we do for clients at work.
Right.
And obviously, we can't use Google Maps because then we'd be relicensing the data and selling it and so on and so forth. Hmm. And that can't be done. And I said, why don't we take a look at OpenStreetMap? Now, it's not complete enough for what we want to do yet, but that's only because that's only a matter of time.
We need really a droid to send out the little...
People were stunned that they collected this much data, and they need more, absolutely, but they're doing a fantastic job.
I think it
stopped the Ordnance Survey screwing us all to the ground for money. We need open map data, and we need to help OpenStreetMap.
I think it should be noted as well, I think it should be noted as well that Langridge, when we originally discussed this, was very, very, very cynical about OpenStreetMap.
I was. And I have
and
become
I believe us having a large debate about this.
I have become a believer. I mean, you're still now at the stage where everybody's town is on the map. I mean, if you look at Stourbridge, where I live, the ring road is on the map. The street I live in isn't on it. Now, one reasonable argument here would be to say, well, why haven't you put it in there then, Langridge? And the answer is because I don't have a GPS and I don't want to go out and buy one just for OpenStreetMap. If my phone did GPS, I'd be doing it.
Yeah, and that's probably going to happen.
It's happening more and more. We're finding GPS getting embedded in more and more devices.
When that happens, it's going to explode.
Yeah.
Do you know there's more cell phones? So. Well, there's. Did you see the thing about there's some statistics says that there's as many cell phones as half the human species.
There are more cell phones than stars. Everyone's got a cell phone.
It's incredible. So
I wanted to follow on from what Ak was saying, actually. Following Russ's email, I actually had a look at like the stuff for Stanley and Falkland Islands, and then I zoomed up to Wolverhampton, and like Ak was saying, he looks at Stourbridge, and it seems to be half complete. All the major roads seem to be there. Some of the more minor roads aren't there. And that thought, that to me said, well, areas where I live and my parents live, I could quite easily do that because I'm just travelling around there quite often.
Yeah.
But again, as Ak says, I don't have a GPS receiver. I don't want to go and buy one because I don't know how much they are. I don't know what I'm going to be looking for. I don't know what drivers are
you
going to
You basically want to press kind of a button, don't you? Drive somewhere and then press another button and then upload it somewhere. Upload a file to a website and that's it.
But they've
done that. It's actually pretty easy. Now, if you have a GPS device, you can just... When you plug it into a computer, most of them are supported by Linux now, and you just save the tracks, and then you upload them to the site, and it goes bang and puts them on the map. That's okay. It's that easy. You can upload them on the website, and it dynamically puts them into the map page. They've knocked off all the technical hard corners that all you need to do is go out and buy a GPS and then use it, and that's it.
Cool. I think we should also say thank you very much to the Falkland Island government for
uploading
their data for free. That's very nice.
The last thing I wanted to say is it does actually. I had a look, as I said, and it does actually look pretty good.
Yeah.
It doesn't look any worse than Google Maps to me, except perhaps less detail.
London
at the moment.
Is really well done. Outside London, it's a bit less well done. It's minutely detailed within about 100 yards of Steve Coast's house.
Yeah. It's all good. So, another show in the can. We should obviously say for people to write in with their emails to show@lugradio.org. We should pick a winner, yes, for the best email. So, are we going to go with our original choice?
I think we should, though.
I think we should.
I think we should too, even though I've forgotten what it was.
Our original choice was Quantum G from the forums.
Yes, indeed.
Trent Williamson, who wrote into Bollock, asked about the Microsoft Open Source Lab. He's quite right. And, you know, we needed a bollocking for that because we were wrong.
Win a t-shirt, one of the new t-shirts. You are the second t-shirt winner.
Yep, Glorious Lug Radio, Glorious Lug Radio, I wrote the best email t-shirt, so...
It's a fucking cool t-shirt. They do look good.
Send us your address and we'll send you a t-shirt. Send us your address and the size you want. Although we can't promise the size that you want.
We'll try.
Send us your preferred size, you'll get the nearest.
But if you're 4'2" tall, we're not going to send you an XXXL t-shirt or anything like that.
The good thing for you at this point is there's only one other winner, so the box full of t-shirts that will arrive sooner or later is going to have one of your size in it. People that win at near the end of the series are going to get
extra. Or it was small.
So we've only got small left, I'm afraid. You know, giant haystacks rising. But yes, thank you very much for listening.
Obviously, go to forums.lugradio.org for the forums. Go to the clan.lugradio.org for the clan. Go to the IRC channel, #lugradio on Freenode. Go and listen to Hashlug Radio, the podcast, on planet.lugradio.org/hashlugradio, where they can you can hear their fortnightly dose of a kicking for us.
Yeah, absolutely. if you don't like us very much, go and listen to them. Yeah.
You can hear them telling fascinating stories about how we've got lots of filler content. right. Because you have no filler content, my friends.
Okay. Before we wrap up, just on that last point, Roger Light emailed into the show to say that clan.lugradio.org is not the clan gaming isn't announced on the forums. Per se, it's just when they're trying to gather interest for it's every Wednesday and every Sunday night.
No.
Every Sunday and every Wednesday night from 7:30 British time.
Why are you swearing at me right now?
Fuck off.
And there it is.
So it's not normally announced on the forums. It's every Wednesday and Sunday
night. If you want to get into LAN gaming, go to clan.lugradio.org. Hook up with the people on the IRC channel.
I played on Sunday. It was really good, actually.
Yeah.
Like 10 people.
It's good. We love the Lug Radio community, and discussions are afoot about Lug Radio Live in the UK and in the USA. So we're hopefully going to be announcing some concrete dates for both of those events in the next couple of shows. So,
okay,
that's the hope. Anyway, the reality is often quite different.
we're doing our best, people. Bear with us.
That would be 6 episodes after we announced Lug Radio Live in the USA has been confirmed.
Shut up.
We should also right now though. We should prime you lot ready for the fact that we are going to be looking for crew for both events. So if you are of the disposition that would like to help out, prepare yourselves over the next couple of shows.
Just think, I mean, you get to get in for free and you get a bright yellow t-shirt and in return for this, all you have to do is carry shit about for 2 days and act like our monk.
Who
could refuse
it's
that?
It's actually better than that. The crew were fucking tremendous.
They were tremendous. They got a free bacon sandwich. I mean, Chris was in the crew and now he's a presenter. Don't draw any conclusions from this necessarily, but you know.
Yeah, we want people to be the crew.
Chris got the shit in the crew. Good fun, so.
Yeah, good stuff. Right, okay. So let's wrap up, shall we?
Yeah, okay.
Let's. See you next time.
Wrapped.